Hi, and welcome to the Autoblog Podcast, episode number 88. I'm your host, John Neff, and with me, as they are every week, is Damon Labrinth and Alex Nunez. How you guys doing?
Very good.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, Alex, you're doing more awesome than you usually are, because you just purchased a PS3, did you not?
Yes, and that's why this podcast is going to be short.
Unfortunately, there are no good driving games for it.
Not yet.
At least none that you can also
not
get
yet.
For the Xbox 360.
Well, you can download the Gran Turismo demo, right? That's on the thing.
You can, but it's a horrible demo. It's one track, and you only get the bumper view. You can't get the floating above the car.
I usually
do once that anyway.
I usually do the bumper view.
The bumper view is the best view anyway. Well, I guess the new version is going to have like an in-car
the bumper
where you
view is the best view, dude.
Yeah. No, it is not.
Yes, it is.
No, you have to see the car.
This is
you have to see the car.
No,
when you're
that's I watched the replays. That's what the replays are for.
I'm sorry.
No. Both. Mark my words, when it comes out, you get it and I'll get it. We'll play an equal amount of time and let's race. Me in my view, you're in your view, and I will win.
I'm going to wax your ass with the
no,
bumper
you will
view.
Not.
Yeah.
No, believe me.
Well, they're actually going to have an in-car view now, too, by the way, where you'll see like the steering wheel, the A-pillars, the whole thing.
I don't like that. No.
Well, this one could actually be good. That's the thing, because everybody else has kind of totally botched it, but yeah.
Graphics might be a little decent.
Yeah, might be a little decent. Well, of course, the only reason you bought it is because Blu-ray won the format war.
Well, that was a big factor.
That was a huge factor.
I bought the Blade Runner 5-disc, massive super-duper edition. So.
I don't know how I feel about it, winning the format war. I'm a little disappointed.
I'm happy somebody won, because it made my decision very easy. So.
Honestly, though... Dude, and this is the wrong pod. You should be listening to like the Engadget HD
podcast. Yeah.
But I was a little bit of an HD DVD fanboy. I had both, but there were no game. I never played the PS3 because there's no good games for it yet. So it's not even hooked up.
Dude,
I have to switch the HDMI cable from my DVR to the PS3 just to play a game.
I've got Call of Duty 4.
Speaking of which,
wow.
Speaking of
thanks, Damon. Damon brings us right back to the top. Let's get on topic.
Speaking of high def things that appear on our TVs, the big news, the huge news for the last week was the debut of the Knight Rider made for TV movie. The return of Michael Knight and Kit, and all the campy Larry.
Sorry.
All right, well, disclaimer, Damon's the only one here who hasn't actually watched it yet. Alex, you watched it as it happened.
He not only watched it, but he live vlogged it.
Shared the experience
as painful
readers.
As it was. And I want to thank you, by the way, for saving the 2 hours of my life that I would have otherwise spent watching it. So I just read yours when I got home, spent 5 minutes, read through it, and said, I'm not going to waste my time. I'll just delete this from the TiVo right now.
I'm glad 2 hours of my life made 5 minutes of yours that much more entertaining.
Well, honestly, and I think the 220-some comments that were left on your live blog post speak to this.
There's 220 comments on there?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is perhaps the best content that we have published in a year. It is so funny. And, of course, you had good material to work with. But like, let me read one of your live blog things. At 9:22, you write, Kit safely navigates through Ford and Ford-owned vehicle traffic as horrible dialogue takes place in his cockpit. It occurs to me that if the show ended right now, I would be completely okay with it.
I certainly would have been. And I was under pressure to turn it off because my friend who was over watching with me and my wife, neither of them appreciated Knight Rider very much. There wasn't a whole lot of love for what was going on the television because it was crap. That's right.
I deferred to my fiance and did not watch it while it was on because she wouldn't let me.
She might not have married you.
Right. So. But I did watch it a couple nights later, and I have to say, I didn't loathe it as much as I thought I would. I think that a lot of the criticisms are valid in that there were, the plot was horrible, the story was crap, the acting was bad. And
guess what, John? Those three things make it bad.
And some of the special effects were silly at best. But, okay, this is my point about why it's not that bad. The original was extremely campy and silly.
Right.
And this one is campy and silly.
No, this one is campy and stupid. There's a big difference.
I think the difference is... They didn't realize that same kind of shtick just doesn't fly in 2008. We're like in the year of really, really serious drama shows.
Well, and then
it doesn't matter if you're a remake from the 80s. You know, you look at the Terminator show, and that's like super serious remake, and they don't make light of themselves. And I think this just went way off the deep end.
Oh, okay. This is stupid. I'm sorry. I mean, the 80s Knight Rider is by no means great. Listen, and I watched the pilot of the original Knight Rider this week just to sort of run, you know, give myself some reminder stuff. And I can totally take the original Knight Rider because it's 80s and it's campy, and you get the impression it's supposed to be campy because all those popular shows when we were kids were very campy. If it was Knight Rider, if it was the A-Team, or if it was, you know, any of those shows. The thing that the original Knight Rider had going for it is that Hasselhoff is actually, you know, a charismatic guy. The guy that's the main character in this show is the worst act. I mean, he's terrible. There's nothing going on there, man. This is all about the car shots.
I agree. It is one giant commercial. There's no doubt about that. Every single car in the Knight Rider world of this movie and the upcoming TV show is Ford, or Ford, a brand owned by Ford, and the only ones that aren't are bad guy cars. Like in the movie, the bad guys hop into like a 1995
it's a Denali. Denali.
Yeah, and it gets destroyed, of course. So, and then another horrible part of the show is where a Ford Edge is chasing Kit through the mountains and keeping up. And it's like,
all over his case, dude. It's ridiculous.
Oh, it was like 20 feet behind him.
It was so stupid. So annoyed.
And Kit, who is voiced by Val Kilmer after Will Arnett had to drop out, Val Kilmer was a bad choice. He doesn't work at all.
Yeah, it really
wasn't no personality good to it. But hold on, there were things to like, and let me point them out. One, I think the car turned out to be better than I thought it would.
Hope so, seeing as it's the focal point of the show, you know.
Yeah, well, the attack mode of it with all the wings, I was fine with that. That didn't bother me too much. The morphing thing it does into other Mustangs, I thought that effect was pretty cool. No?
You know, it all worked fine. The problem is, a special effect, it doesn't matter how good the special effect is, if it's mired in a giant bag of crap, which is what the rest of the whole program was.
Oh man, it's gonna be hard to argue with you. I can't disagree that it wasn't a crappy show, but that doesn't change the fact that it got awesome ratings.
It got awesome ratings because there was a curiosity factor. I'm telling you, yeah, this is obviously gonna be
like us pumped it up.
Well, yeah, and people watched it, and most of the people that I spoke to, like when I went to work, you know, this week, mm-hmm. that watched it, they were like, I don't know how you sat through 2 hours of that crap. I know a lot of people who bailed on it because it was pretty much unwatchable.
It wasn't that bad. And that's not to say that now that they have all this time and writers back, maybe this was like a casualty of the writer's strike. Who knows?
Well, I thought this was done before the writer's strike.
It was written before
the writer's strike, you know, and
I don't know. It seems like it was put together in a month, so it could have been, you know.
It was very, and on top of it just being lame, you know, in terms of, you know, it was just lame on so many levels.
Oh, you know what somebody brought up in the comments? Do you remember the show Viper?
Yes.
Yes.
It totally reminded me of Viper, which was just a vehicle, you know, commercial for the Dodge Viper, and was horrible in all the same ways.
There was a commenter, I think, who called the show Ford Rider, which was pretty funny.
Seriously, I think with your live blogging on that post, you also have to go through and read the 200 comments because they're priceless.
Well, it's like I would try and go and look at the comments during the commercial breaks because I was obviously it was, you know, half the time I was like, you know, watching screen and looking down and watching screen. But getting back to the actual show itself. The only ones of the main characters who were any good was Bruce Davison as Charles Grayman. And because Bruce Davison was easily the best actor.
Right,
you know,
he's a real actor.
I mean, he's a real actor. Everybody else, this guy Justin Bruning, not good. Deanna Russo, not good. The scene where she gets the heart-to-heart from Kit, where Kit, as I wrote, you know, goes all Dr. Phil, and his voice thingy turns blue, and you have this really crappy, you know, Grey's Anatomy, lame, you know, touchy-feely music. I mean, how could you watch that and then try and tell me that the show, you know, was even remotely good? That was like having someone's fingernails get dragged across the chalkboard, you know, sitting through that stuff.
I have an extremely high tolerance for crap, especially when it involves loved things, you know, nostalgic things. I mean, just to see it come back, it's like, gets bonus points for me.
And the bad guys were
particularly atrocious. I will give you that. They were the worst.
The least intimidating bad guys who have a magic helicopter that in one sequence, it's either two or three different helicopters when they're chasing him, and it's the same sequence. It's as if they fire the continuity person? I mean, it was just, they go from, seriously, there's a scene where they're chasing Kit, you know, and they're up in the helicopter. They're in a black helicopter that has retractable landing gear. And this is one of these, like, things. And so you watch it, and then they, you know, you go back and forth, and then we have Kit talking to What's-Her-Face in the car, and you cut back to the bad guys, and they're in a Huey, you know, like a Vietnam era, you know, Huey with, like, landing skids and everything. It's just blatant and lazy and crap.
That's, I mean, I totally got the impression that the production of this thing was incredibly lazy. I mean, it was from the the disjointed continuity, like horrible props that look like, you know, the guns look like squirt guns to me. Like they weighed about 10 ounces.
Listen, it's going to be a show, obviously. I mean, it did well in the ratings. It's obviously going to be a show. They said it, they pretty much told you in the final moments that it was going to be a show. And by the way, NBC, would you promo your shows? Can you not show scenes from the final act of the thing? You saw the crash of the SUV into Kit in the TV commercials. You saw the final scene where everybody's in the car, where they tell him, you know, that they want him to drive. That's also in the TV commercials, you know, in the, when they're on the way to the funeral for his mother, who, we spend so much time on this whole funeral for the mother, a character who was on screen for, you know, a few minutes.
Whose son hardly lamented her death when she got shot.
First of all,
died in
these guys
arms.
Killed your mother, okay? And you don't pop them, you know, and when you have, like, the opportunity? Eh. Give me a break, dude.
I thought the writers would actually, I mean, if I were the writers, I would have had him got up and go into a rage. Just like, I don't care if you shoot me, I'm going to kill you. And everybody's dead in like 5 minutes. Because the dude's an Army Ranger. I mean, he's got skills. But no, he gets up and, like, gets on his knees and has a gun pointed at his head. It's like, dude, you have mom dead, you know, and adrenaline running through your veins. That's, like, potent adrenaline. Go kick some ass.
Yeah, bottom line, I got the impression that the NBC and the producers and everybody else involved in this didn't know what they wanted to do with the show. Because
well, they wanted to cash in on it.
Well, they were trying to cash in, but you know what? You can cash in. I'm all for people cashing in, but you can cash in and make it good, too. There is so much good television on that there is. It's inexcusable to take something like this where you can have an opportunity to make it good, and it is just egregiously bad. And I give it 8. The over-under for next season, I'm setting it 8 episodes. I don't think it will get past 8 episodes. I'm assuming it's going to get a season order, and I think it's going to get canceled by week 8, because if it's of this level, people will flee in droves. I mean, because Bionic Woman was bad too, and this to me was similar to Bionic Woman in that it was, you know,
I thought
lame
the Bionic
and
Woman was supposed, I didn't watch it, I thought it was supposed to be really good, like, in the, I mean, the, you know, same kind of show, remake of a,
no, the Bionic Woman classic. Again, remake of a show, and they didn't know what they were doing after they launched the show. It was all over the map. They didn't know how to plot it. It turned into Alias with a chick with a robot leg. Give me
so
a break.
One thing I really liked about Kit was that, you know, in the original Kit, when he was talking, he just had like those three bars that lit up and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
In the new Kit, he's got basically just like a large LCD screen on which he can put his little voice thing. I don't know what
it's like,
you would
a voice
call it.
Print type,
right, synthesizer, you know, thing where you see his, you know, voice sound waves. But he can also use the screen to display images, and I thought that was cool because it kind of allows him to express more. And my thought was,
Kit, I can't believe we're talking about the expressiveness of Kit.
All right. Anyway, my thought was, I want to make it my goal to get Autoblog in the show on that screen somehow. Because he scans the internet for information. So wouldn't it be appropriate that he'd come across Autoblog? I mean, we show up in Google really well. So if Kit is searching Google for anything car-related, chances are he could find one of our posts.
Yeah, NPC's going to be all over, you know, putting Autoblog on.
I think if I find the right person to talk to. Dude, I didn't shred it. I think I'm going to watch it when it comes on, no matter. I hope that they listen to
everybody's
saying.
Oh, I'm sure I'm
going to
watch it, too, because I'll watch it in morbid fascination, at least the first real episode.
Let me put it this way. I hope they listen to what everybody's saying, and if they're producing the series right now, the shows, I really hope they slow down and take their time and put a finer edge on it.
Not likely.
No, not likely, but...
It's not like NBC's been rolling out the hits.
Ouch. All right, I guess we're not going to get on the show now. All right. Well, let's move on from Knight Rider, sadly, and to the next couple big news pieces of the week. Oh, no, let's talk about what we're driving first, media vehicle-wise. Anybody?
I have a Jeep Liberty.
How's that?
It's a little underwhelming.
A little?
You know what? Here's the thing. And again, this is the... I like the styling of the Liberty. I like the fact that Jeep goes to the square styling. But in the end, it's a Liberty Limited. It's got... It's you know, well-equipped. It's got heated seats. It's got leather. It's got the two-tone leather. It has, you know, a good stereo. It's not a NAV stereo or a MyGig. But, you know, like I said, it's well-optioned, but I'm not crazy about the 3.7-liter engine. It's, you know, okay, yeah, it moves it around. When you're riding in the Liberty, it feels narrow.
People say that a lot about the Nitro, too, that it's really narrow.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I would, for it's $30,000 is the sticker on this, and bottom line, you could do a lot better for $30,000.
Yeah, but in the day... I mean, the Liberty isn't really like an explorer-sized SUV, but like a true body-on-frame SUV. I mean, their prices got bloated so much that $30,000 doesn't surprise me. I mean, this isn't a Santa Fe from Hyundai that's going to start at 23.
And then you have the other Chrysler interior issues, which you know, carry over. Everything feels, you know, solid, and the doors thunk, you know, solidly when you close them and stuff. But it's just not nice to look at. You know, it's this, you know, very hard gray all over the instrument panel. You know, two-tone gray with the fake metal and then a fake pattern metal. And it's just not very visually appealing. It's like I have a 99 Grand Cherokee, which I've talked about before, and I get in that, and it feels like a Rolls-Royce compared to some of these new, you know, Chrysler products. What? Where, like, the armrests are soft and things like that, and you just don't get that in some of these new ones.
In the past 5 years, when Ford and GM are spending gobs of money doing research on interiors and better materials and better design, it must be the case that Chrysler either didn't have the money or didn't think it would be well spent.
I don't know.
On their interiors.
It makes for a very disappointing experience in the car. And like I said, the car, it feels narrow. It's like we did a run to like Costco, so I threw the kids in the back and the car seats, and that all goes in fine. It's not a big deal. But you know, like I said, it's just not as comfortable. It's not something I would get, because I don't find it to be, you know, a comfortable enough thing for me to spend, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours a day at least, you know, commuting and, you know, back and forth.
Does it ride like a truck, or does it ride pretty smooth?
The ride is somewhere in the middle. From what I understand, it's better than the last Liberty, which I only drove one once for a few minutes. Uh-huh. On the highway, it's reasonably composed, but you know, it's not. It certainly isn't, you know, particularly car like. You know, if you're you know, in terms of handling, if you're going through an area where you've got a bunch of curves and stuff like that, you're reminded that you're in a Jeep Liberty.
All right, so thumbs kind of down at the Jeep Liberty for now.
I'm a little indifferent to the Jeep Liberty.
How many days does it have to win you over?
It has tomorrow left, and then I'm getting a Jeep that I'm much more interested in.
What's that?
I'm getting a Grand Cherokee SRT 8.
Oh yeah,
far more interested in that. I have a feeling that's going to be a whole lot more enjoyable than the Liberty.
Oh well, geez, the Liberty's screwed. The Liberty doesn't have a chance.
So that's the story. That's what's in the garage.
Damon, how about you? Anything in your garage?
Yeah, my new BMW 318iS.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You got the little Beamer hatch now.
Yeah, for those of you.
No, he didn't get the hatch.
No, not the hatch. That's the Ti.
Oh, yeah. So you have the...
Actually, I remember listening to a podcast between you and Paukert way back when where you guys talked about that car. Yeah, no, it was a long time ago, 2 years ago, I think.
Back in the Paukert days.
Paukert days, exactly. For those of you that aren't aware, Project MR2, you guys are probably being concerned about what's going on with the updates because we received literally like 3 emails asking what's going on with it. but anyway, there's been a delay mainly just because my fiance was involved in a hit and run and the person put her into the center divider at about 80 miles an hour. She's okay, but the car was toast. So I was in the market for a used car and just picked up 1992 318iS, 124,000 miles on it. Yeah.
So that's the sedan.
That's the coupe. They made a 318iS sedan too, but I wanted a two-door because
I'm not very good on my BMW nomenclature.
Honestly, most people aren't. It's kind of like old Benzes too. Like you've either got to be an aficionado on them or you just don't know. So
all the E36, 38, with the BMWs of yore, I'm not very good.
No, I've got an E36 with E38 M5 wheels on it now, so I'm pretty jazzed.
That's very nice. That's going to look nice.
They're the BBs, yeah. Anyway, aside from that, actually, I drove the Vishnu-tuned Evo 10 last Friday for a relatively short jaunt, a couple hours.
That's
way more entertaining than a 1.8 liter from 16 years ago, yeah. They're actually doing some pretty interesting stuff. For those of you that aren't aware, Vishnu's been kind of a big tuner as far as Evos and Subarus, and most recently they've been doing a lot of BMW 335s. They actually developed a proprietary computer system that... it's not quite a piggyback ECU, but it can control fuel timing and boost levels through the ECU, and they've been able to just do stupid stuff with the 335, they've also done really, really well with the old Evo, so they got a new one, and within a week, they've already had it getting up to, I think it's an extra 80 horsepower and about 100 foot-pounds of torque just on the ECU tune.
Hello.
Yeah, exactly. The only problem is, of course, it's an aluminum block, but they haven't even raised the boost yet. They've only just changed timing curves and that kind of thing. So, but they're going to be offering a pretty large line of products, probably, just like they did before. They're getting a bit more specialized now, where they were trying to get a lot of products out for everything. Now they're going to be a little bit more kind of specific about this is all you really need. You don't need to throw on, a downpipe and this, that, and the other thing. Talking to Shiv, the owner, he's very excited about one of the cars. I'm excited about the Rally Art Lancer, which of course has the same engine as the Evo, except for a smaller turbo, and doesn't have all the same all-wheel drive trickery as the Evo 10. It's basically the Evo 9's all-wheel drive system. But he's excited about that, and they also have a Gallardo, which they're starting to work on, which is going to get 2 turbos on it. So,
oh my god!
Hopefully, we'll have a drive up on that at some point.
That's
going to
be awesome.
Yes, that will be really, really highly entertaining. It's bright freaking yellow too. But anyway, we actually got kicked out of Mount Diablo for taking photos up there, which is really unfortunate.
What's Mount Diablo?
Mount Diablo is one of the larger hills around here. It's a state park, but I guess you have to actually go to the parks department and pay them money ahead of time and get a permit.
To take pictures?
Exactly. Now, I pay
to take pictures of the park or something in the park?
Something in a park. Yes?
That's stupid.
Because you know what I do? I pay taxes to do that, but whatever.
Right, exactly. And we can totally go completely off tangent on that.
Right, I pointed it out to the...
Is it pulling a permit to take pictures, or is it pulling a permit if you produce a tripod, which I know a lot of places are...
No, anything... Basically, it was commercial. That was the thing, is we were taking photos for publication, and that was the problem. Yes. So... after I pointed out to the gentleman that, I pay taxes, he kindly asked us to leave. He was also going to cite us for driving fast. Not that we were, of course not. But when you've got a big red Evo and a yellow Gallardo following it, and then actually my friend Brad driving the 318.
It doesn't matter if you are
exactly.
Fast.
It just sounds like, it
you
just
could
sounds
be
like
driving
awesome.
Fast.
Exactly.
The opportunity is there.
Exactly. And by the way,
the cop...
Please.
Or the cop knows by association that if he were driving one of those cars, he'd be driving fast. Exactly. So therefore, you must be.
Exactly. And again, I hate bicyclists. I'll just leave it at that. But anyway, moving on.
So you're saying you won't be writing for Autoblog Green anytime soon?
No, I won't be writing for Autoblog Green anytime soon.
I can't expect that.
I don't mind Autoblog Green. I really like Autoblog Green. But no, just bicyclists on roads that assume they just have the right of way and have a tendency to back up traffic. I've got an issue with that.
Speaking of Autoblog Green, you guys would be surprised how many emails I get that are like, you know, you and Autoblog Green should have like a throwdown. Like they want us to like have a challenge or a fight or like they think we're like diametrically opposed and that conflict should somehow be settled in some type
That's
of
That's the silliest shit I've heard all week.
So yeah, I get like
What does Sam do? Does he just like punch himself?
You know? Yeah. Since he writes for both sites. Speaking of which, Sam, who always has interesting stuff in the garage, just had the Infiniti EX35.
They just got recalled today. Of all things.
The EX35?
Yeah, both the Murano and the EX35 got recalled for a.
The EX35 has hardly been on sale for
Both
weeks.
Of them. It's the new Murano. It's the 2009 Murano. Yeah, but it's like an airbag. There's a computer problem with the airbag, so it should be just like a simple reflash. But growing pains. What are you going to do?
Yeah, seriously. Anyway, that post will probably be up before this podcast gets published. As for my Autoblog garage, still empty. Still don't have anything scheduled. So the Alero is holding court inside the garage with my fiance's 2004 Civic. It's been great. However, I do have some news. Speaking of the fiance and the upcoming nuptials, I don't know if I should reveal this, but this is the podcast audience, not the
Main audience,
right? Not the main audience, so I can tell secrets to you guys. But
it's a podcast exclusive.
Exactly. Those of you may remember the first time we reviewed a Bentley was a year or two. I think 2 years ago. And we got the Continental Flying Spur. I should say I got it. And it happened to be over the weekend that my now fiance's brother was getting married. So I got to be like the star of the wedding because I had this extremely expensive six-figure car. And I got to drive the new bride and groom away from the wedding. And I wrote up the article.
Way to screw up their special day, man, by the way. The one day they're at, it's actually all about them and you roll up in a $300,000 car.
They loved it. They couldn't wait for the ceremony to be over and go drive around in the Bentley. I am dead serious.
That's awesome.
I'm dead serious. Right, we drove around like an extra maybe 15 miles before we pulled up to the reception just for fun. But it turned out to be a really fun review because, when we review vehicles, it's better when there's a story involved, we do something with it, and that always isn't the case because I think a normal week in most of our lives is pretty boring, but...
Sitting in front of a computer doesn't really lend itself to excitement very much, no.
No, not at all. Yeah. And so I called Bentley up, and I'm like, hey, remember when I reviewed that one Bentley? And I'm getting married now, so can I have another? And they said yes, so they're working on getting me a Bentley. I don't know which one.
Hey, John.
So,
John?
Yeah.
John, I'm getting married in June. Anyway,
well, you got to call people, man.
I just need the number to call, man. That's all.
Well, we don't have many Bentleys left to review. We've done the Continental Flying Spur and
no,
the
we
GTC.
Haven't. We have not done the Arnage, and we have not done the...
Arnage, the Azure, and the...
Azure, and the GT Speed.
And the GT Speed.
So, and we have not done a regular Continental GT.
Yeah, I don't know if we're doing it.
And that Roller Coupe is coming out, too, so maybe... Alex?
The Brooklands. We haven't done a Brooklands.
No.
Oh, I should have mentioned that. Because, see, our contact at Bentley, who's a wonderful gentleman named David Reuter, he asked me, he's like, well, I would assume a sedan would be good for chauffeur purposes. And I'm like, well, A, I'm not going to let anybody drive this car. I don't think you understand. I'm not going to let my brother drive the, $250,000 to $350,000 car. So chauffeuring is not really an issue. I will be the primary chauffeur. So my number one choice, if it's available, is the Continental GT Speed, and second choice being the Arnage, a close second, a very close second, because I want to try out the kind of old school style. So we'll see. But I should throw the Brooklands in there. Who knows? They may have one over here by that time.
If it's going to be in the summer, they'll have everything.
And that'll be at the Brooklands. It's like, oh my God, it's
pretty
huge.
Epic. Is what it
I'd
is.
I'd like to pull a Bentley Brooklands. up next to a Rolls-Royce Phantom and see which one is more imposing. I assume the Phantom would be, just because
the Phantom,
the tip of its grill is like 4 feet high.
You've seen both in person. The Phantom is definitely more imposing. The Phantom is like a building with wheels.
I wonder which one's... Yeah, you're right. You're right.
The Phantom, dude, the Phantom is bigger in
than
every
any,
single...
Yeah, any, at least any passenger car.
That car almost didn't fit in my garage. I mean, I had to kiss the wall.
Oh, it would not fit in my garage at all. It would stick out like 4 feet. So anyway, that's pretty much the only meaty vehicle action that I got going on right now. Although I did request a Mustang Bullitt, because we talked about the Mustang Bullitt a little bit last week, and it turns out Chris Schunk already has one scheduled. So I'm a little peeved, but I think I'm going to get one later just for fun and maybe to reshoot it, because I really want to try that out.
You know what? You know what is pretty awesome that we're gonna have to get whenever it arrives.
What
is that Alpha 8C Cabriolet?
Yeah.
Holy crap!
Yeah, I'm sure they're gonna have a really large press.
Oh my god! I mean, how awesome is that car?
Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. They only released three pictures of it today, but it looked good from every angle.
And also another one that's completely awesome that, of course, has been rumored to be coming this way for a while, that came out this week, the pictures, is that Fiat 500 Abarth.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks like a whole lot of fun in a tiny package.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not sure if I want that over the Panda. That's the thing, is every time I start thinking about the 500, I'm thinking, well, if they could bring that over, I'd like to see the Panda over here.
Yeah, no,
they're basically the same car.
Right.
The Panda's a little bit lighter. It just seems like a slightly better car, but it doesn't have all those retro cues that, you know, were...
Plus, you can get the Panda in as a 4x4, and that would sell like...
It's epic, yeah. No, that's
yeah, but isn't, around here.
Isn't the Panda kind of like the Suzuki SX4 in its form? You know, like a four-door little tall
it's
wagon?
It's boxier. I think the Panda's cooler looking. I think the Panda is...
No, I agree,
is,
but I'm just trying to jog my memory. That's what it is. Is this little, like,
I think it's four-door wagon-ish thing? I think it might be smaller than the SX4.
I don't know.
I have a feeling it's narrower. I'm talking about a car that I've seen in person, I think, once, and that was like
the thing with the 500
years ago.
Is just like the Mini, you're going to be paying like a 15% premium just because of the nostalgia.
Dude.
Which I've always been irritated with the Mini. I mean, the Mini does have really, really good hardware for a small car, and it speaks to the point that people like Bob Lutz make over and over again, which is that Americans will not pay a premium for a good small car.
And that's complete.
And the Mini really is a good small car,
excellent
with some
car. Yeah.
Serious hardware.
Mm-hmm. And people are willing to shell out the cash for it. I mean, in Northern California, I see those
all
around
over the place.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, though, they don't sell a ton.
They
sell a good number.
They sell a good number, and they sell
the
a lot more than Aveos.
Oh my god, absolutely. Well, no, I mean, it depends on where you are, because I know Chevy sells a ton of Aveos, but I'll just say, speaking regionally, I see, for every Aveo I see six Minis.
And I can count on my one hand the number of Aveos I've seen in Northern California in the last month, and I can count on my one hand the number of Coopers I just saw today. So
I saw a Mini, I saw an Aveo yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, they will buy it. What we need to
one
do
of the new
is...
One of
that
the
was
new
the sedan, you know, like the...
I am, just to see who is right, I'm going to look up the sales numbers of both really quick.
All right, cool. Well, either way, what we need to do is to have one of us, I'm going to vote me in on this one, although I don't think my fiance would be happy about it. We just need to have one of us put up in, like, London or somewhere metro in Europe for a week or 2 weeks and just try to drive as many mini cars as possible and just have a mini car death match.
A mini
and
car
just,
death
and
match?
Just blog
without
the hell out of it every
death.
Single day.
Yeah,
yeah, without
we get
the death,
to live
yeah.
afterwards?
But just do the Panda, the Fiat, do the Cooper, the Mini Cooper
all the
Diesel.
City cars.
Exactly.
Dude,
all the city
1007
cars. Exactly.
Is the one that I totally want to try.
That would be awesome. Well, the thing always creeps me out when I look at it.
It'd be good just to get a blogger in the UK, I think. Or maybe not even in the UK, because I don't know how many chances you get to, like, drive. Like, I wouldn't want to get somebody to London.
Just somebody in continental Europe would be would be great.
Yeah, we're thinking about moving there anyway, so. Oh, I guess I should bring that up off the air.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, Damon, great.
No, dude, that'd be good, because then you'd be on an alternating
exactly,
time.
No, we'd, be, factory I, we'd, so. We'd have the time change covered, yeah.
Yeah,
you'd have the time change covered, right. And then you could have, you know, nice photo features on all the factories.
Exactly. All right,
here we go. I have the sales numbers.
Ooh, do tell.
Mini.
They have it broken down into like Cooper and Cooper S?
No.
Okay. It's all just Mini.
Yeah, I'm looking for Mini January. Where the hell...
Do you have a Vios pull up yet?
Wait, hold on. I got the wrong thing for BMW because I got worldwide sales instead of the... I just want U.S. sales.
Do you have the Vios pulled up?
Scintillating podcast material. Yes. John searches for sales numbers. Well, somebody's got to talk while you do this.
Well, John's searching about something. Alex, you saw the post today about Tata not wanting Jaguar. Like, they're going to pick up Jaguar Land Rover and spin off Jaguar. So, assuming this happens, and of course it's just an assumption at this point, who should buy Jaguar?
That's a great question. Who else would be interested in Jaguar? Because the only...
It's a leading question, because here's what I'm thinking. What about BMW?
Well, it certainly would be interesting.
Oh, although no doubt it'd be interesting,
my concern, but... honestly, with with BMW buying Jaguar, you'd have good powertrains, but... listen, I don't want to see iDrive in this crap in Jaguars. I'm sorry.
Well, they've already got the transmission that kind of looks like it.
Change, you know?
No, that's the thing. But see, the reason I bring up BMW is they've done a good job with Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, yes, they've been good customers.
And they've kept that mark relatively separate aside from this baby Beamer that's going to be sharing a platform with the 7 Series or whatever.
Let's not forget that the current Range Rover... is a BMW that the design that all that happened right didn't that design
right.
happened
huh,
when
yeah.
BMW owned them
BMW
right?
owned it huh that's right
because it had the
that.
BMW engine.
They obviously don't want Land Rover that goes without saying. Tata's already got the factory built or is building a factory somewhere in India. I think it's like south of New Delhi or north of New Delhi. But who else could be a plausible candidate?
BMW
to buy
would be
Jag?
Attractive because they have money, you know, too, so it's not like Jaguar would be, you know, in bad shape.
Who bought ProDrive? Or, I mean, who bought Aston Martin? It was ProDrive and
it was
who?
And they have a bunch of...
Funded by
like
a bunch of Indian investors, right?
Or a bunch it's a bunch of, I think, Arab investors.
Oh, okay. Because that would be another option, too, is they can just get all those marks back and put them together in a cohesive whole. But anyway, that was kind of letting my mind reeling today, and we got a lot of good comments
It would be very interesting to see what happens with Jaguar, if that spin-off thing really does happen.
All right, I have the sales numbers of the Aveo and the Mini, all types of Minis, for the month of January. Okay. It's pretty surprising. Mini sold 2,460 cars in January. The Aveo sold 5,314.
I told you, dude, they sell a
more
ton of
than
Aveos.
Double the Mini.
The Aveo is an important car for General Motors
even
in the United
that's
States.
Just U.S.
That's just U.S. Even last year... the Aveo in January of 2007 sold 3,789.
They sell a lot.
2,050 for the Mini.
If you go and look at the year for 2007, I think you'll find that the Aveo is either number 3 or 4 overall.
That does speak to the point that Americans don't want to pay a lot for a tiny car. They'll buy a tiny car if it's super cheap, and then complain
right,
to
the people
bank.
That are buying Minis are. People that are buying Minis are different than people that are buying Aveos, though. And that's the thing, is we haven't really tapped that market for a Mini, or for a Mini car, I should say, that's in that, like, $15,000 to $20,000 price bracket, because even a base Mini, you're well over 20 grand right off the bat.
Yeah.
You start getting the Cooper S, you're 25 plus,
it's because,
and it's really, really hard to stay below 30.
It's because gas is less than $3 a gallon right now. So the people, who are buying... $30,000 cars want to get a lot of car for their money. They don't give, you know, they don't care about gas mileage. Whereas in Europe, they'll pay as much as we pay for an SUV to get a Mini that gets good gas mileage and is just a good car. It's solid, good materials, great handling, and, you know, has everything.
There's other tax implications in Europe too, because they get bent, I think, on vehicle taxes depending on. Well, I know in the UK it's emissions based, right, Damon?
I believe so. Yeah, I know. That's right, because it's in all their advertising, they've got a basis, or they've got
grams,
the carbon emissions
per
on it.
Kilogram and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
All right,
which always disturbs me when I pick up a copy of a car.
Before we reach the conclusion of this podcast, I do want to get to the new Ford Falcon that debuted in Australia. Because, of course, this is Ford's rear-wheel drive platform and a huge vehicle for Ford in Australia, which it's a place where it's not doing very well in against General Motors, which has the Zeta platform and the Commodore sedan and all that. So they debuted the new Ford Falcon, two different versions. What are they? The FG series?
Well, you have the Falcon XT, which is like the entry slash fleet model. Mm-hmm. Then you have the G series, which you have the G6, G6E, and G6E Turbo. And with each step, you go upwards. And G6 and G6E, it's appointments, that change from one level to the next. Uh-huh. And then the G6E Turbo, you get the turbo inline six, which is awesome, and you get, pretty much a fully loaded car. And then there's the XRs, which are the sport models. So you have the XR6, XR6 Turbo, and then the XR8, which gets the Boss 290. The 290 stands for kilowatts, and this is a hand-built engine by FPV that was the engine that was thrown in all of the cool FPV Falcons that came out last mm-hmm. year, like the 40th anniversary GT and the Cobra. They all had the Boss 290. The Boss 290 is now just the regular engine for the XR8. And that is, I think the Boss 290 is 393 horsepower.
388.
It's 388, and then what? Like
83 pound feet of torque. 383.
Right, and the 6 is like 360 something and 390 something. Yeah, so
right
torque.
Behind the V8.
The 6 is awesome. I mean, that turbo inline 6 is wicked. And then yep. they also have not released the tech specs yet on what the new FPV cars
are. Yeah, the FPV GT, which looks insane.
Wicked. It's wicked. It has these mean, like, black inserts under the headlamps.
Yeah,
it's just those relentlessly badass.
It has what we call the Alice Cooper eyes, yes. as opposed to like just normal angry eyes, which are just like the turned in headlights that make makes it look like a scowl. These actually have like black plastic underneath the headlight, almost like a football player puts under his eyes. And yeah, it's the Alice Cooper effect, and it looks insane. It looks awesome. I love it.
It is a killer looking car. And there were more pictures than they only released one official photo, but there was an event where they unveiled all the cars in Australia, and one of the Australian papers had a photo gallery, and pretty cool. And of course, the new Utes all came out also with the same engine options as the sedans.
So a couple things. One, I think the styling is decent, but I don't think it was as big a leap forward as were the Commodore sedans.
Very evolutionary compared to the last one.
The Commodore sedans on the Holden side, they took a huge jump in how much more modern and kind of masculine and chiseled they looked. And this was very, very... I mean, the basic shape of the Falcon remains the same. The front just looks a lot cleaner and newer. Second thing is that these were only designed to be right-hand drive. So the export opportunities for any markets that are left-hand drive are zero.
Yeah.
And they basically implied that this platform, this car, could evolve into possibly being left-hand drive, but it's more likely that the next version, so the next generation of the Falcon, would be designed to be a world car, and that would be the one that the U.S. market would get. So what's disappointing is that, whereas GM and Holden designed theirs to be either right or left-hand drive, their rear-wheel drive platform. Like, Ford didn't have the foresight to think, we may want to use these, in some markets that are left-hand drive. I don't know, like the U.S. And instead, we have to wait forever for a new rear-wheel drive platform, at least past 2010, is what they're saying. And I think that's way optimistic, because it's 2008. And we certainly aren't going to get a new next-gen Falcon by 2010, so it's disappointed me in that respect. In the respect that it's going to have no impact on the U.S. market.
This is the story with a lot of the outside of the U.S. market Ford stuff. It seems like the product planning in Europe and in Australia and these other places is awesome, and here you have a morass of you know, CUVs, like you just, John, you posted today that, you know, Jalopnik had that report that the Taurus X is essentially toast after the 09 model year, which is the least surprising thing on earth, because honestly, where does it fit in anyway?
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
You have the Flex. It's, you cannot have that and the Flex and the Edge. It makes no sense. So obviously that had to go.
Those are the Ford models we're getting inundated with, and not like awesome passenger cars. And
the one thing we have over these other places is the Mustang. Mm-hmm. These other places don't get the Mustang, and we do.
Right, and that's it.
When Japan gets the Mustang because...
And
Japan is insane in that, you know, they'll sell...
Stop right there. Japan is insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And then it's not like they get a lot of Mustangs. Just, you know, they get this, like, tiny amount, but, you know, it's crazy. They don't care. In Japan, they'll bring over, you know, a left-hand drive car because that adds cachet to begin with. And, you know, a big American muscle car like a Mustang... I mean, it's probably as exotic as a Ferrari in Japan.
Now, we also, I mean, one thing you mentioned in your post, we also have the F-150, but that's just a vehicle that no other market in the world wants except the U.S. And even though it's great.
Well, I think they sell the F-Series in Australia also. I think they do. But I think it's more targeted towards, you know, people that need to work. It's not like here where, you know, the average person might buy one because they like it.
Right.
You know?
It's not a lifestyle vehicle at all. So, but that said, other big news, the production Fiesta was also revealed, and that was the car totally based on the Verve concept, and literally the production version looks identical to the Verve concept.
Even the interior
looks better.
Yeah.
Even the interior. I mean, it's pretty incredible how faithful it is to the original Verve concept.
And what's
and that's definitely coming here.
Yeah, what's
right?
more incredible is that that's coming here, which is awesome. It looks outstanding. And quite honestly, the first Verve concept there ever was, I wasn't too impressed with it. But they kept releasing new Verve concepts, like the four-door and the, I don't know, a couple...
Then the U.S. version of the four-door.
And they got better and better. And the Fiesta that they showed, I think, was the three-door version, right?
Yes.
Three-door hatchback. And, it was just... It looked stunning. Absolutely stunning. And you're right, the interior looked like a concept interior in a good
way.
It's
the same. It's the same. It's just they use non-concept materials, but the layout and everything is pretty much dead on.
Hugely, hugely impressive, and really, really can't wait until that hits the U.S. market. Because I see that...
Look at that...
I see that as a small car that is premium in a sense that it's under the Mini, but it's above the Aveo, you know? In terms of, like, a premium small car, it's got way better materials than an Aveo, and it's going to ride and handle, and there's a lot...
It's got better materials than the Focus. I mean, why would I buy a Focus when I could get this Fiesta
that's hopefully
so
not
much
long
nicer.
After the Fiesta arrives, the next-gen Focus will debut somewhere in the world and be on its way to the U.S. as well.
Your lips to God's ears, because...
So true.
We have the Ventastic Focus here.
But another thing I think is just ironic is that Ford was the only brand in the U.S. that kept its rear-wheel drive platforms alive through the 90s when everybody switched to front-wheel drive. I mean, they switched all of Cadillac to front-wheel drive, and there wasn't a Chrysler in sight that was rear-wheel drive. And Ford kept the Crown Victoria and kept the Mustang, and it at least had one rear-wheel drive platform that never died. And then it got passed up so fast when this resurgence of rear-wheel drive vehicles happened, because it just thought it could soldier on with the same rear-wheel drive platform forever. And that's clearly not the case, as Chrysler just trounced all over it with the 300 and the Charger and the Magnum. And the Mustang has held on, but we're in the age of rear-wheel drive sedan renaissance, and it's passed Ford up completely. I mean, it's 2010, 2011 before we even have the chance to get one.
Yeah, and by then, like I said in the post about, I did a post on a rumored thing where some Australian site posted that Alan Mulally was getting a Falcon, and actually, to correct the record, which I already did on the post, I got word back from someone at Ford this evening, because I tried to reach out to Ford during the day and didn't hear back. But they said Alan Mulally is not bringing one of these Falcons over for himself. And now I just forgot what I was going to say because I totally got sidetracked.
I was totally on your train of thought too. and I totally forgot.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, well. Yeah, oh, well, it didn't matter.
Maybe I'll remember for next time. I don't know.
It's all right. None of the points we make are very insightful anyway. Well,
that's putting it lightly.
Before we end the podcast, too, I should tell you, I don't know if you guys know this, but Adam Curry, you remember Adam Curry, the MTV VJ?
Yeah.
He's like the grandfather of podcasting now. He really jumped on that bandwagon when podcasting started, and he does a show called Podfinder, which is just, it basically highlights like 5 podcasts a week, or however often it comes out. And he did a podcast on auto-related podcasts, and we were featured. So it was really cool. He basically, you know, intros to whatever podcast and plays like 2 or 3 minutes of it. So that was cool. A lot of extra people, I'm sure, heard about us. And hopefully if you're a new listener because of that, hello and welcome.
And don't let this particular podcast discourage you from coming back.
Although we have to warn you, the next one will be pretty similar. So,
this is pretty much what you
get. If you're not into it, sorry. It doesn't get much better. But that said, Alex, I'm sure you want to go play your PlayStation 3. It's late. I want to go play video games too, and probably have to do a little posting. So, Damon, I don't know what it is you do. It's
Damon's gonna go put wheels on his car.
Yeah, that's what Damon's gonna do.
Yeah,
Damon's gonna go actually do something related to automobiles. Which
right.
So that said, as always, if you visit the autoblog.com website, every day we have posts going up all the time to keep you informed on all the automotive news that's going on. And you can subscribe to the Autoblog podcast in iTunes by just doing a search for Autoblog, and you'll find it. And please leave a comment or a review of the Autoblog podcast in iTunes. We'd be grateful. And that said, until next time, everybody have a good week.
See ya.
Later.
Yeah. And now I just forgot what I was going to say because I totally got sidetracked.
You were going. No, I was totally on your train of thought too, and I totally forgot.
Wow. Maybe I'll remember for next time. I don't know.
It's all right. None of the points we make are very insightful anyway.
Since putting it lightly.